I've got something just for you.
But the situation was, you see, those things were never done.
Society has reached a dangerous point when we can no longer take a joke. And we're already there. We've been there for a while. I mean, the past decade plus of culture wars pretty much illustrates that. Among other avenues of curtailing speech and invoking cancel culture and using algorithms to bury people who are not socially acceptable, you've got famous A-list comedians complaining in the past several years, and not just in passing, that the younger generation, people on college campuses, people brought up in the new genre of thinking in politics, can no longer take a joke.
Kevin Hart. Yes. In 2019, he got the gig hosting the Oscars, and then he was fired because of old homophobic tweets and jokes that he did. Shane Gillis was fired from SNL due to podcast appearances in the past where he did ethnic voices and jokes. Again in 2019, Roseanne Barr fired from her sitcom reboot in 2019 after posting about a past Obama advisor. 2011, Gilbert Gottfried fired as the voice of the Aflac duck after making jokes about Japanese earthquakes and...
People can't take a joke anymore, and the brunt of the joke is that someone else gets to decide if it's funny. And they think it's somehow their responsibility to police speech and thought and what is acceptable. And it's the authorizing that really gets to me. I mean, the best part of humor is that it's supposed to be unauthorized. It's supposed to catch you off guard. It's supposed to be rude and flip your preconceived notions. It's supposed to invert the assumptions and poke fun at things that people say are sensitive. And when you're dealing with the way they frame things in society, the context of a joke is to poke the very spot that's too vulnerable to talk about, that you're not supposed to be able to question. The emperor's new clothes, right? And in many ways, the more off-limits, the more sensitive, the more untouchable certain topics are, especially when they relate directly to society itself and the world that we all live and deal in, the more you know that something wrong is going on there. You know, 1984 talked a lot about shuttering of thought, deauthorizing certain words, and we are living through that time. So it really creeped me out when I came across this movie from, I think, 1969, a Czech movie called The Joke. A Czech New Wave movie by Jaromil Jáhls. And this came close around the time of the 1968 Prague Spring. Back in the day when I did backpacking, we spent some time in Prague, and I learned a few things about this. It was talked about a lot. It was a big cultural impression in Prague that they had been through this Prague Spring, and a lot of it was about consciousness and freedom of expression against the very much authoritarian regime that they were under at the time. We're already there in many ways, and when it comes to some of the most important principles, the First Amendment and beyond, freedom of thought. You know, Melissa really got me thinking about this with her last video. Even though in many ways the subject was centuries-old material in England, it's still just as relevant today, and it's a reminder that it wasn't just things that you could say in print and discuss in public, although there was that too, like not being allowed to use the names of people in Parliament or name certain institutions or put the king's name in writing or talk directly about the king or blame the king.
There is a huge difference between the American Declaration of Independence and the Grand Remonstrance in that in the Declaration, they directly call out the king. They directly say, this is the king's tyranny. De Quincey pointed out in his essay on the falsification of English history that the king was not allowed to ever be personally wrong, and people believed that. As God's representative on earth, it's not possible for him to be personally directly wrong.
You know, there was also the issue of consciousness itself. Can you even conceive of the thought? Do people even know what they don't know?
That is a difference in consciousness that took place over that time, because at the time of 1641, no one was directly calling out the king and saying anything to him. We had to move past that as a people and recognize, like, okay, that's not right, though. It's not right that the king can't be held responsible for his own behavior. Like,
Are people able to discuss other modes in political systems? Because we're dealing in many ways with the kind of stuff that 1984 is talking about, the shuddering of thought, the shuddering of the ability to conceive of certain things, in part because certain words are off limits. And it's an authorization issue. It's an authoritarian issue. There's a lot of words you could pull out of the bag for regimes that are very controlling, despotic, dictatorial, centralized, bureaucratic, tyrannical, but authoritarian really plays into that root etymology meaning of the word author. The idea that there's a narrative here. There are certain things that are subjectively okay to say and certain things that are subjectively not okay to say. Who authorizes that? And why do individuals and why do individual groups in society not get to decide that for themselves? Why are there people who have asserted their authority to be able to decide whether or not certain words are authorized and could be used in society? I mean, obviously, this politically correct speech has gotten way out of hand. Identity politics is bizarre. Identity is multifaceted and for some people shifting. We all wear types of masks and we put on different hats in societies according to the little groups that we put ourselves in, which is sometimes situational, and some of it relates to who we, quote, think we really are. At any rate, the idea of imposing identity politics and forcing other people to recognize identity on your terms and not their own, it just feels like a terrible logical fallacy. There's no institution in society less correct than politics. It's the most assuredly corrupt institution we have anything to deal with. And letting people loose, as we have in the last decade plus in this ill-begotten culture war that has distracted from the political dynamic, the power structure, the economic issues, you know, it's been a baby with the bathwater throwing out of our own rights as individuals when we're already so lopsidedly in a struggle for dignity in our world. I mean, they've pitted lower-level people against each other to fight over names and slogans and flags and conservative and liberal political brands and all this other culture politics, identity politics nonsense, and to get people's eyes off of what is really going on. I mean, things have changed, and yet they're the same today, and there's new authoritarian powers. So it's not even really about the communism or socialism issue, but it's about this idea of authorizing. Who authorizes the narrative? Who okays the words that you can say? And who gets to cancel you if you say the words that you can't say?
Vier. Vier. Was kann ich denn anders sagen als vier?
Anyway, this joke movie is pretty interesting and pretty chilling. It's based on a novel, so I don't know how much is hypothetical. There's a lot of literary devices going on in the plot summary. But basically, things like this were happening at the time under a socialism and communism ideology in the Czech Republic, other parts of Eastern Europe, Soviet Union. These things were going on, and they had to be spoken against. They had to be warned about.
The regime branded everyone it saw as opposed to its ideology as kulaks. These camps were set up all over Russia and were simply another of Stalin's killing machines. Millions of people regarded as enemies of the state were worked to death in them.
And they really depict in this movie that there was a surge of idealism surrounding socialism and a youth movement that saw its own kind of renewal and its own self-empowerment. In this political philosophy that was, you know, taking over at the time and being re-energized, but it has a very ugly side. While people are dancing and singing and smiling about how great the utopian future is going to be, there's a re-education system, there's prison work camps, there's gulags going on. And this is happening factually, but it's also partially depicted in this movie. And basically, you've got a guy who's a university student dating this girl. And she says something glowing about the social revolution and the wave of optimism in the streets. And he writes back that optimism is the opiate of the masses. And he sends her this card with this sort of cynical optimism is the opiate of the masses writing. He says something about Trotskyism. And they turn him in to the student council, who become a sort of committee in judgment, who move to kick him out of the student unions and the student committees, and then to remove him from the university. And this guy has to go through the moment where he's sitting in a room and they've read what he's written on a postcard to the room. And they've asked who's going to vote to kick this guy out of the university, and he has to watch as everyone puts their hands up. And his would-be girlfriend, his friends in the room, people who were his classmates, his peers, his contemporaries, raise their hand and implicate him to be removed from the university just for writing the words, "Optimism is the opiate of the masses," in a private letter. You know, that they dig up and sent to this committee and confronted him about. You know, it wasn't just being kicked out of the university. You know, he was pushed away from all the institutions of his city and his area at the time, and he was forced to join this military gulag. He wasn't sent there directly as punishment, but unofficially, that was his duty to go be prison labor worker in a mine under a sort of military unit. And so naturally, the guy was very bitter about this. Years of his life were taken off, and he comes back later to confront the people who raised their hands in this classroom, the personal friends who implicated him and essentially testified against him and voted to ruin his life, to devastate people's lives on the basis of his speech, in this case, his written speech, you know, a private letter. Optimism is the opiate of the masses. At worst, it's like a cynical attitude, but also true, like if you're going to have dancing in the streets, rallies for, you know, the powers that are assumed under communism and socialism, then you need to also be able to face the criticism and dissent of its dark side. And it's this whole concept of re-education camps. And so that plays out. And it's a pretty interesting movie. I mean, it's a little dated. it's foreign movies, so some people won't like that. But it really highlights something that is going on today. You know, it is parallel to the last decade, decade and a half. A lot of it's a new left, no longer people for peace and love and equality and a kindness of feeling, a sort of libertarian left.
The First Amendment didn't apply to any campuses in the country. You couldn't give a speech without getting it cleared by the administration.
When the student takeover of a campus building resulted in more than 800 arrests,
it just set off this explosion among the students, and people who had never had a political thought in their head just got fired by the idea that someone couldn't tell them when and where to say what they wanted to say.
And then a couple of days later, the faculty voted the university could not limit the content, make no regulations restricting the content of speech or advocacy, and at that point, we had won.
It's not those people. They're still there somewhere, probably, but they've been overshadowed by a very much authoritarian left.
Several thousand students have gathered for what has been billed as a victory celebration. Speaker, the leader of the free speech movement, Mario Savio.
That there be no restrictions on the content of speech save those provided by the courts. And that's an enormous amount of freedom.
Left, I mean, this happens on the right too, but it's been very pronounced in the free speech realm and the writing realm under people who think they are following an idealistic, better system, but who are in fact demanding under great penalties that people conform and submit to an authoritarian control of the internet, of the campus culture, and of society in general, the things you're allowed to say. We've seen cancel culture take over. It's especially pronounced when celebrities, some people did do really bad things that are either criminal or borderline criminal, and other people got canceled for an ill comment, a joke that someone else couldn't take. Maybe the kind of statements that you wouldn't make, you know, like, but you shouldn't be able to take away other people's rights for it. And it really isn't proper to ruin their lives over either. There's been a lot of that kind of stuff.
On November 9th, University of Missouri student journalist Tim Tai was...
You've had these protests on campus. I think one was University of Missouri or whatever.
On the University of Missouri campus.
And you've got the really vehemently vocal, angry person saying that they are shutting down free speech, that this campus zone is not a place where you can exercise your free speech, which has been the traditions of universities in this country and in this society.
Assistant professor at the school, Melissa Click, also appeared to try to prevent a videographer from documenting the scene, saying he didn't have a right to document the events.
Hi, media. Can I talk to you?
No, you need to get out. Well, you need to get out.
No, I don't.
You need to get out.
I actually don't.
All right. Hey, who wants to help me get this reporter out of here? I need some muscle over here. You need to go.
You've got the comedians I mentioned, Seinfeld, Chappelle, others, showing how people can't take a joke anymore and showing how there's movements to cancel them and to ruin their careers because they dared to say something.
The more you say I can't say something, the more urgent it is for me to say it. And it has nothing to do with what you're saying I can't say. It has everything to do with my right, my freedom. This theater should be called the Theater for Artistic Freedom and Expression. I want that for myself, and I want it for every student that's educated at this school.
And as I was watching this joke movie, this Czech movie about how one bad joke can ruin your life because people inform on you and kick you out, we had on the other day that show Hacks with the fictional comedian Deborah Vance, and there's an episode where they confront her. She's about to get a show and things are going to go great for her and her career, and then a clip surfaces and goes viral on the internet of jokes she made 30 and 40 years ago that were off color.
I guess so. Supercut of all her shitty racist jokes.
She sucks.
So fucked up, they're giving her an honorary degree.
That were subject matter that you can't just say today in politically correct culture. And then there was a wave to cancel this Deborah character on the basis not of things she said recently, but jokes that she made on a stage 30 and 40 years ago.
This is insane! Me! I am being taken down by a liberal mob!
I mean, you're not the only victim here.
Oh, really? Who's the other victim? Someone who was offended by a joke?
Many jokes.
I'm sorry, people are too easily offended now. If you don't like a joke, don't laugh!
She used to be held to account for that by young people at a college campus who weren't alive at the time, who can choose not to watch that material if they want to, but who nonetheless sat in judgment of her and were one step away from condemning her in the same manner as the character from this movie, The Joke.
You in the gray shirt.
Hi, I just wondered if you could address some of your ableist material. I'm sorry, what is ableist? Your jokes that made fun of people with disabilities.
Oh, right, yes.
As someone that has dyslexia, or as you called it, listexia. Yeah, I just thought maybe you'd like to speak on that.
They had already canceled her appearance on campus. That was supposed to happen the day before, and now they were cancel culturing her in this weird tribunal of really young college students with no perspective on life who think it's their place to deauthorize someone else's speech, their comedic career, their jokes.
Now, this isn't a public flogging. This is a dialogue for acknowledging harm and fostering empathy. Let's open up the floor. Would anyone like to share?
You know, again, she portrays basically an A-list comedian entertainer, and they canceled her ability to even speak on campus and pressured her into apologizing, basically just for saying things that aren't politically correct today.
You could just apologize. No. Deborah, the jokes weren't great. You wouldn't do them today.
No, you'd never apologize for a joke. I'm a comedian!
It was absurd, but it was also creepy and chilling. And this cancel culture has its corollaries in cancel culture, the COVID round, where you had people demanding that you take medical treatments and wear masks and stand 6 feet apart and not interact with certain people and not go to Thanksgiving. And I had some young kid who was like 18 when all that COVID stuff went down yelling at me that I couldn't stand in a little square box next to Melissa while we were checking out at the grocery store. He attempted to make me stand 8 feet across from the checkout aisle because she was going to swipe the credit card after they had touched the groceries and put them in bags, just because COVID was fresh.
I know those kids didn't come up with those words. I've heard those words before.
You know, there were authoritarian little, maybe not even college girls, working in like the smoothie shop behind a plate glass window, wearing a mask, chewing me out because I didn't have a mask on. But they want me to do commerce there. They would like me to tip them, right? But they're also going to stand in judgment of other people in society and tell them how to behave.
And these kids didn't understand that they were instruments of oppression. I didn't get mad at them. The kids, the freshmen, not ready yet.
In this context, what they're allowed to say, perhaps even in private letters or in stand-up comedy performances, where if you can't take a joke, you shouldn't show up.
I'm gonna kill you not to be so funny all the time. That's all I'm asking.
Where if you're too sensitive to laugh at controversial issues in society, maybe you should stay home and watch a movie or something instead. I mean, I'm not always in the mood for stand-up comedy, but the last thing I'm going to do is stand in judgment of some off-color joke. I mean, a lot of those comedians try to be revolting and offensive on purpose because of this, but it's not even the point.
He thinks that if you're too funny, he might not look so funny.
The point is, this authoritarian mechanism is trying to deauthorize our ability to think for ourselves and exercise our personal rights and sovereignty. And they're trying to create an authorized narrative to drive and manage society and then the behavior of people within it on a completely arbitrary and subjective scale. They're trying to arbitrarily control what words you can say, and it can change at any moment, and it often does. And you're supposed to just go along with the ebb and flow of the unstated passive-aggressive mood of the mobs and the political parties that basically corral them in our society. I mean, yeah, why don't we just not take a joke and throw the baby out with the bathwater and just watch our freedom of thought get shuttered? Watch as we lose the ability to even remember what these concepts were about. We're losing our history so quickly. So few people, relative to what's going on in society, are paying attention to the past or attempting to learn why we had these developments. What was at stake in our consciousness and society? What rights were we fighting for? And why were we doing that?
The legislature of England, wrote the London Journal, is the only power and the sole authority in England. The people have no voice over this supreme authority. To claim that they do is to speak of rebellion and of taking the government into their own hands. The power of the people extends only to the constituent act of establishing the government. When the government is settled and the power of legislation given to a body chosen to represent the community, then the original power of the people in their collective body ceases.
No, we'll just hand it over to an optimism, to an opiate of the masses feeling that somehow it would be better if we just didn't allow some people to say certain words because some other group, probably pretty arbitrary, they might get offended. And before you introduce these opposites in online forums and political discussions and half-made-up media events, were these groups even associating with each other? And when they did associate, was it really just individuals who didn't care about all that and at least probably tolerated each other? Was it really two groups who were in a standoff because the other group was going to use a word? Is that what we're going to do? We're going to shut down people's speech and destroy their lives and try to re-educate people? I think not. I hope not. I hope nobody takes that kind of joke.
I have here another birthday gift for Mario, which is designed to solve a pressing problem that he faces every now and then. If you saw the photograph in the Chronicle yesterday, you saw that the cop was pulling on his tie. You saw also that he was wearing one. Now, it's that that creates the dilemma. What I have in my hand is the solution. What happens is that when he grabs your tie, it comes off.
The shuddering of thought, the closing down of consciousness, the control of language, the denial of speech and of reach, the isolation of individuals, and the discouragement of free thinking, of thoughts.
Into the brain and allow the scientists to control behavior.